everyone. Welcome back to the A10 Talk Podcast. We're a couple days away from A10 Men's Media Day. Very excited. We're less than a month away now from the season tip-off, and we've still got so many more teams to talk about and give our early season preview. So I'm joined today by Joe Branderbit, Andrew Buckles, and Jack Milko to talk Bonnies, Loyola, and LaSalle. Three very exciting teams that are going to be competing in the conference this year, and one newcomer that I think everyone at A10 Talk and the A10 family is really excited to have here in Loyola Chicago. So, guys, how's everyone doing tonight?
Great.
Pretty good. Thanks for having us on.
Yes, doing great, Sam. Great to see you, Joe. Great to see you, Andrew. Happy to
Likewise.
Be here.
All right, so we got a lot of great stuff cooking up for you guys tonight. Doing research for this podcast today. I mean, not only do we have a new face in Loyola Chicago, but we've still got more new coaches to talk about. It's so many that I keep forgetting, but we're going to be covering it all tonight. So first, I think we've all been waiting a really long time for this. Andrew, first off, welcome to the A10 Talk family. We couldn't be happier to have you here. And so covering Loyola tonight, our first question is, what's the Loyola Chicago community they're feeling right now going into this first season as part of the Atlantic 10?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a couple thought processes of the fan base right now. I think, first of all and foremost, it's excited. A lot of the people that went there, alums, community members, are obviously big city people in Chicago. And I think that now we have some comparable universities and cities to go and travel to. And I think that alone is exciting. It's also a step up in competition. As much as our former Missouri Valley Conference foes would like to think that the A10 is the same as the Valley, it just isn't. And so I think there's some excitement there. And then I think maybe the one thing, there have been some good times in the Valley, especially in the last like 5-6 years. And some people have grown accustomed to those like short little trips that you could make on a Thursday night. You could drive down to Southern Illinois and see a game. So I think there might be a little bit of just newness to it all, leaving something that they knew pretty well for the past decade. But overall, I think it's good, and people are excited to create new rivalries and meet new people as well.
Yeah. So when this announcement came through, it came pretty early last season. So we've kind of been expecting it now and been expecting to do this preview now for almost probably about a year. Loyola, I think, has gained a lot of traction as a program in the last couple of years. I mean, they're a very historic program, but in the last couple of years, they had that Final Four run. They've garnered a lot of attention for Sister Jean and everything. Do you feel like since that Final Four run, and maybe even a little bit before, because I mean, obviously, that was like a flash in the pan moment to get a lot of national attention. But if you're covering a team like that, you could probably see a breakout moment like that coming for a program. Was this move as surprising to Loyola fans and the community as much as it was for, people who watch the Atlantic 10 that aren't really familiar with the program?
Yeah, I think it was. So I actually have a podcasting buddy, and we talk all the time about, Loyola and what might happen, just kind of ramblings. And probably about, I think it was the start of last season. I want to say it was like October, November. He goes, oh, I bet you $5 or like a beer or something that in the next 5 years, Loyola moves to A10. I was like, you're crazy, man. Like, there's no way. I don't think they're doing that. They want sustained success. Like, they like who they play against, all that kind of stuff. And then sure enough, like a few months later, they moved to the A10. And we both were shocked. I, in particular, was extremely surprised. So, yeah, I think it came as a shock. And one that after just like a little bit of research, I think we all kind of have been on board with. But overall, definitely a surprise to those in the Loyola community.
Yeah. And, a very pleasant surprise, if anything. I would like to open this up to everybody as well. The one thing that I found really interesting and something that we talked about very early on when Loyola joined is that not only was this a great move because we have such an interesting, fun program joining the conference, but I think, because, the A10, I think, really had a huge realignment moment about 10 years ago. When the original Big East kind of went separate ways and then the American came into the mix. So there was a lot of shuffling around, And what happened with conferences like the A-10 and even like the American now, with everybody continuing to kind of jump ship at that conference, is it found itself very geographically imbalanced, right? The Atlantic 10, you know, Atlantic, what started off as a very East Coast centric conference, slowly moved very far into the DMV, moved a little west. And for the last couple of years, you've seen teams like Dayton and St. Louis being kind of the outliers in the conference, and we've seen them be very strong teams, strong contenders in this conference, but you've got to admit, you know, having to go to, you know, Fordham once a year, UMass once a year, like all those teams around DC, it's tough. It's challenging for players, you know, from an energy level, you know, keeping guys, you know, healthy. And so for you guys, you know, having the Chicago market, not just for TV, not just for a competitive standpoint with other conferences, how much do you think this move balances out the Atlantic 10?
I mean, St. Louis for the past few years has been kind of an outlier out there in the middle of the Midwest, right? I mean, even going from Dayton to St. Louis is no easy trek. So it's nice to have Loyola Chicago in the Atlantic 10. I think Chicago is a really important market. I will say this. I hope Loyola Chicago is not a one and done like Butler was about 10 years ago. That I think will not happen, considering Loyola Chicago came from the Missouri Valley and Butler, you know, they went to the Big East, and the Big East at that same time, like you just mentioned, Sam, was kind of in the thick of things of realignment and trying to figure it out. So I actually think the Atlantic 10 was really smart here in adding Loyola Chicago, getting out in front of it, making sure that they're getting a really historic, terrific brand, a great school, and also the third largest media market in the country.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely, it's very interesting. And yeah, I would definitely agree that I do not want to see another one and done situation. It'd be very interesting to see, you know, because I mean, Xavier was a part of this conference for a long time as well, you know, having that Cincinnati part. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see actually how balanced this conference would have been had they stayed. But, you know, you can't really expect that anymore. But let's talk about the Ramblers in general, you know, as a team now. So aside from, you know, moving into a new conference, they were already experiencing some pretty big changes in the fact that they last year was the first year under head coach Drew Valentine. You know, a pretty strong year for a first year head coach, regular season champs, tournament champs, another NCAA tournament appearance. And now in this new conference, do you feel like this is, you know, going into this season, do you feel like this is step two, year two for Drew Valentine? Or is it kind of like back to square one where he really has to like, take some more time to get his team, you know, reacclimated and kind of reevaluate what this team's identity is going to be?
I think the biggest thing he has going for him is some upperclassmen leadership at the guard positions in both Braden Norris and Marquise Kennedy. Those guys are going to lead the charge. They both need to stay healthy. And if they even play like they did last year, I think we have a pretty successful season. Aside from that, there are a lot of pieces that either were on the roster last year, but didn't play too much. We have a redshirt freshman who, you know, did not play at all. And then three brand new freshmen, incoming freshmen, four transfers, two of which are grad transfers. And then two sophomore transfers. So there's a lot of moving parts on this team. So we really need both of our starting guards, Marquise and Braden, to lock down early and sort of be the guides on and off the court for this team. As far as Drew goes, I think the biggest thing he has going for him this year is that his staff stayed the same from that last year to this year as assistant coaches. They really like all their assistant coaches, a lot of younger up-and-coming guys. So I think that for Drew is going to be huge, knowing that he has his trust in those guys already. And I think he's just building off. I think I hesitate to use the word like building or rebuilding because that kind of takes something different. But I think that he had a successful year last year, a lot of returning seniors on that team last year. And so now I think it's kind of a prove it year for him. Like, let's see if he can keep his head above water, maybe finish in the top. I think the top half of the conference would be somewhat of a win for him with the potential to be a little bit higher than that. And if he can do that with this sort of talent, then I think there's some deep success, successful roots that he will have put down in this new conference.
Yeah. And so you mentioned those guards, those senior guards, Marquise Kennedy and you said Jaden Dawson, right?
Braden Norris.
Oh, Braden Norris. Yes. And then Jaden Dawson coming in as a freshman. So one thing that, you know, I think that the A-10 has always excelled at in for the past probably decade, even more, is their guard play. I mean, you've seen so many guys, right? Bones Highland, Jalen Attaway, you know, a lot of guys like that coming out, you know, strong, quick guards. And so do you think that coming in, Loyola, you know, has already kind of that same build that is suited for a successful A-10 run? Or do you feel like, you know, some adjustments might have had to be made to this roster to, you know, kind of get them acclimated to this conference?
I do. I think their guard play is something that will compete right away from day one in the A-10. You know, if we talk about wing play, that's going to be a little bit different conversation. But one of Braden Norris is fantastic. He plays 40 minutes a game sometimes, but he is a little undersized. So that can often be an issue on defense. Whereas Marquise Kennedy, even though he is only 6'1", he is a ball hawk on defense. He's athletic. And so those two guys kind of play off each other in their different styles. With the couple of new guards they have coming in, both incoming freshmen and Jalen Quinn and Jaden Dawson, I think those guys will follow in the footsteps and just continue hopefully building off what those two have going right now and what we've had in the past with some winning players in the Missouri Valley Conference, like Clayton Custer, Marcus Towns, those Lucas Williamson most recently. So I do think that they are ready to compete as far as their guards go right away.
Excellent. And, you know, so I think, you know, while I think they do have the energy, you know, and the talent to compete in this conference. I mean, first, you know, I think they've got a really strong non-conference slate, you know, a couple Power Five opponents thrown around here and there, really interesting MTE at the Myrtle Beach Invitational. So for you, Andrew, what would you say is your favorite matchup, you know, either, you know, just a team that you'd love to see them play or just a team that you think they'd really, you know, be able to show what they're about against in their non-conference slate?
For me, it's got to be DePaul, Big East foe, inner city. It's a big deal. We went to their place last year and knocked them off, which was a fun game. It was great to be at, to go there. But there's just a little extra juice in those sort of games. A lot of the guys, like last year we had Lucas Williamson was facing off with Javon Freeman Liberty, who they both went to Whitney Young, which is an inner city Chicago school. And there was, you know, there's always like a storyline like that. So I think that game will be a lot of fun. I think we have a good shot at winning that game. And then from there, I think that game against Clemson is going to be fun. It's part of like a Halloween hoops or Thanksgiving hoops. If there's some name to this event, there's like four games on one Saturday and then two the next Saturday or something like that. But that was put together kind of late. And I think that Clemson should be pretty solid. It's good experience for those guys to travel, especially to the East Coast, and have that one under their belt. So yeah, for me, like I'm real pumped to invite DePaul into Gentile Arena this year and face them.
Nice. All right. So that's, you know, a lot of great stuff. Very interesting. So love to see how Loyola fares in this conference this year. Great stuff, Andrew. So now let's move on to LaSalle. While, you know, they're a long mainstay in this conference. They kind of entered the coaching carousel this off season by hiring, you know, longtime, you know, former LaSalle assistant, longtime Big Five mainstay, Fran Dunphy, to replace Ashley Howard. So, Joe, before we go into, you know, the beginning of the Dunphy era, I feel like we didn't really get to dissect it. Daniel and I didn't really get to dissect it at the end of the year because we were kind of talking about, you know, the great Bonnies NIT run, which we'll be talking about later. But for you, you know, 6 months now removed from the end of the season, where did Ashley Howard's time as LaSalle head coach fall short?
I think that the number one thing that Ash Howard really didn't do well was just the technical stuff, the fundamentals, especially last season. It was just a lot of sloppy play. You know, there were like a lot of points being left on the board just because of turnovers. I mean, free throws, it felt like they were leaving like 8 to 10 points on the on the board just by missing free throws. I mean, like I said earlier, just a lack of fundamental, and it almost felt like a lack of a set offense. It almost felt like they were running the same two plays every game. And I'm really excited to see what Fran can bring to the table, just because of his like plethora of basketball experience.
Something that I found very interesting about, you know, the Fran Dunphy hire, which is something that I feel like I kind of learned a lot about last year on the podcast, in, you know, obviously, you know, people talk about New York and you know how New York has got a basketball culture that's kind of in its own league, right? You know, people call New York the Mecca of basketball and stuff, but when you really look at it, you know, not to put down the city at all, but I mean, every major city, especially on the East Coast, Philly, Boston, DC, has its own unique brand of basketball culture that I think mostly bleeds into the college programs that are there. And I think, you know, that's something that people in all the Philly schools really value. So for you, could you kind of explain, you know, outside of just, you know, LaSalle being part of the A-10, you know, what being part of what they call the Big Five kind of means for LaSalle and LaSalle basketball culture?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Big Five is just legendary, especially on like just the East Coast of college basketball. I mean, you got Nova, Temple, St. Joe's, Penn, and us. We've all had our runs of successful basketball. And I think Fran Dunphy, with the experience that he's had, especially in the Big Five, coaching Temple and Penn, and like starting with LaSalle, now back with LaSalle, I think that he is just a very valuable Philly basketball guy. And you can sort of see it in the staff, like even Donnie Carr, who's been on the staff for I think a few years now. He's a big like Big Five guy, big just Philly basketball guy. I think it's important to like have these guys here, just because, I mean, LaSalle's in the Big Five for a reason. So I think it's important to bring these guys like Fran, Big Five legend, into the helm.
Yeah. And so before we kind of get into like, you know, some X's and O's stuff, I think Jack, you had a question about some other guys that Fran was bringing in.
Yeah, so obviously Fran Dunphy, Philadelphia legend, LaSalle alum, but he's also in his 70s. And Fran brought in Joe Mihalik, who used to coach at Niagara. And then after Niagara, he went to coach at Hofstra in 2013 and recently retired there due to health issues. But those health issues have subsided, and Fran brought in Joe Mihalik to serve as a special assistant to the head coach. And both men are LaSalle alumni. So my question to you is, Joe, where is the program headed long term, considering they're hiring Dunphy, who's in his 70s, and Mihalik, who's his right hand man, who's in his upper 60s? It's an escape from the new young hire that many programs, such as Loyola Chicago, has made with Drew Valentine. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on LaSalle kind of throwing it back to some of their own legends.
You know, it is something I thought about, like when Dunphy got hired, what, like maybe 6 months ago now, probably less than that. But it was something that was talked about, like, you know, Fran celebrated his 74th birthday last week. Age is becoming a factor. I think that LaSalle made this decision as sort of a quick turnaround, trying to get LaSalle out of the bottom of the A-10. And I think that they needed, and I think they wanted to do that as fast as they can. And I think with the candidates, I think Fran was the guy that can do that in maybe 1, 2, 3 years. And then sort of use that as a stepping stone and go from there. Now, if Fran is only the coach for 2 or 3 years, who they go with next, I honestly don't know. We'll see. We'll see where that road takes us. But I think it was a very now, like, driven decision. And I honestly didn't hate the decision. And now that it's had time to marinate, I actually really like the decision to go with Fran to try and turn things around. and get us out of the, I guess, the doormat of the A-10.
Do you feel like a lot of people on campus and, you know, maybe people, you know, just in the community, maybe some boosters, stuff like that. Do you think a lot of people kind of feel like that too? Do you think people maybe might've needed a little bit of time to kind of adjust to Fran in the spotlight?
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely very, very polarizing ends of the spectrum when he got hired. Some people loved the hire, thought that he was going to like bring LaSalle to the Final Four or something. And then other people absolutely hated the hire. And I think now the people that like absolutely hated the hire are starting to sort of creep into the bright sides. And I think another thing about him is like Fran Dunphy, he's like name recognition is, I think, really big in terms of like getting funds and boosters donating. And I think Fran's probably going to be the best guy going forward for the next few years. And you can definitely get a sense of that on campus. I mean, like the guy's just like out and about in the student union. I actually had a little conversation with him earlier today. He's a stand-up guy. So can't really say anything bad about him.
That's awesome. And so, I mean, you know, I think, you know, I'm not part of the LaSalle basketball community outside of A-10 talk, but when it comes to hiring an old coach like that, you know, you see it a lot in a lot of sports and a lot of levels of basketball, right? Like, you know, like when Tom Thibodeau got hired by the Knicks, a lot of people, including myself, were like, you know, I just don't think Tom Thibodeau's style of coaching is the type of coach that can succeed in 2022. He's a great coach, but he was better in 2012. Obviously I was proven wrong in many aspects. But do you think so the question I have for you is what brand of basketball do you think Dunphy is going to be bringing to LaSalle? And do you think it's something that can work in the A-10? Or do you think he's going to have to, you know, he might be in for a bit of a rude awakening. Conference play might begin. He might, you know, kind of get blown out because, you know, his style is just not meshing and he'll have to make adjustments. What do you see happening, you know, as the season progresses?
That's a really good question. I think that Dunphy is going to try to bring back a bit of old school, like old school basketball. And honestly, if I'm going to be honest, it might not work. Like it might not work right away, but I think that Fran Dunphy is a coach that can like make adjustments on the fly. The players really seem to like him and respect him, and they really seem like they want to play for him. So I think that maybe he won't be like the most like razzle dazzled in terms of like different play designs, but I think that he can. I think it just comes down to that he's a successful coach and the teams that he coaches are like generally good and they generally succeed in conference play.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, if you're finding any way to win, you know, that's all that really matters. Let's, you know, I kind of want to get into the roster a little bit. Looking at this roster, you know, I'm seeing a lot of newer faces a little bit, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, Jameer Brickus and Anwar Gill sticking around for another year. But something that was really interesting to me was this article about, you know, two new players, Lucas Mercandino and Jorge Sanchez Ramos from Argentina and Spain, respectively. What do you think this says, you know, pulling guys internationally? I mean, I feel like it's something that's, it's not rare in the A-10, but I feel like it's something that, you know, I feel like maybe coaches who try to rely a lot internationally, you know, Jeff Neubauer, you know, sometimes get kind of bogged down by, you know, they sometimes pull a lot of great international talent, but, you know, they might be, you know, missing out on some guys in their own city. How do you feel like these new faces are going to kind of mix in with this roster?
I think that they're going to mix in really well. I mean, the international market, especially nowadays, I think is just growing and growing by the minute. And I think that the coaches, especially the coaches in the A-10 in general, are doing a good job of sort of drawing from that market. And I think that these players are going to come in and make a difference. I mean, we obviously haven't seen any of them play yet or practice, but I think like from what I know about Jorge Sanchez Ramos, I mean, from what I know, he's like a bit of an explosive offensive player, so that's always a nice plus. And I think also another international that they brought in, Rokas Jucius. I think he comes in and starts at the five. I think John Rothstein was also saying that when he came to visit LaSalle. But yeah, I think these guys will find a very 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 permanent home in LaSalle's rotation. And I think it's going to be a very I guess mixed rotation. I wouldn't be surprised to see 9 or 10 different guys playing in any given game.
Yeah, like a bit of a platoon style kind of.
Yeah, I mean, sort of like what we saw St. Peter's did last year with the Drame twins, and look how it turned out. Now the Drame twins are here. Very, very, very excited about that.
Yeah, that's a great pickup. I mean, yeah. I feel bad for St. Peter's, but you know, I mean, that's just going to happen when you have a program like that. Yeah. And you know, we were talking about that, you know, last week, you know, with a lot of these coaches, you know, that come from, you know, especially like, you know, a perfect example, Kyle Neptune, right? It's like, mm-hmm. Kyle Neptune was great. He was great at Fordham. He was great for Fordham. But it's like, you know, when they have such a deep connection to other places and other schools, or they're just looking to make a move up, it's like, you know, the A-10's great, but you know, how much longer can we really hold on mm-hmm. to top level yeah. talent? So looking at their non-conference schedule, obviously some really good stuff. You know, being a school in Philly, being part of the Big Five, you always want to schedule Big Five mm-hmm. opponents, and which they do, and they do well. I mean, you guys are playing Nova, Temple, Penn, Drexel, yeah. and then obviously you're gonna be playing St. Joe's when conference play opens up. But outside of those guys, what are you looking at in terms of their non-conference schedule for you know, some really top tier LaSalle basketball?
I mean, the Villanova game with the doubleheader at the Palestra, that was definitely one that I had circled. I think it'll be a bit of a game where like Fran Dunphy can sort of show everyone what he's been working on the off season. I think that'll be a good game. Obviously, the Temple game home at the Goal Arena, I think that'll be good. Looking at the schedule now, let's see. I think Wake Forest. I think that's one to look out for. Power Five. I think they're doing that game in Jamaica. Yeah, they're doing that game in Jamaica as well. So I think that'll be really interesting to see how that game plays out against an ACC opponent.
And you could also play Georgetown. That's kind of interesting to note as well. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, a lot of interesting stuff. That Nova matchup, yeah. This might be about, you know, the Gola boys, who, you know, are a big friend of A-10 Talk. Mm-hmm. I think we're the ones that kind of started this beef. It looked like they were kind of taking some shots at some of the Villanova players. Did you see anything like that?
Not extensively. I just scrolling through Twitter, you know, you'd scroll and like and laugh, but I haven't been looking into it too much, but it's always funny to see all the stuff that they stir up.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. Yeah. I mean, I think I saw a couple, you know, former Nova players that might be, you know, like NBA talent, you know, kind of get involved there. So if anyone listening has the time, go check out the Gold Standard on Twitter and see what they were cooking up there. Okay, so we've got a brand new team, we've got another new coach, and now we've got the third team we're talking about tonight, which, you know, has neither of those things, but still has a lot of new faces around the program, and that's St. Bonaventure. So, Jack, first off, I think last season ended on, I honestly would have to say, a bit of a weird note. I mean, obviously, you've got the high of seeing the Bonnies, you know, in the NIT semifinals, making it to the Garden, trying to go for the win for the first time since 1977. But after that, and even a little bit, you know, after the A-10 tournament itself, you know, you had a lot of weird, you know, rumors floating around the team. You know, is Mark Schmidt going to UMass? What's going to happen with a lot of these players? You know, Ashun Ashuni going to Iowa State. And it leaves this program in, you know, not really a rebuild, but not really in a state where they are necessarily the front runner in this conference. So for you, you know, kind of picking up the pieces there, are the Bonnies in, you know, just as good of a spot as they were last year at this time? Or do you think, you know, they're going to need to kind of, you know, reacclimate themselves a little bit?
To start, I think the 21-22 season was the weirdest in St. Bonaventure history. Last year at this time, we were talking about how the Bonnies are going to run the table. They're possibly a dark horse Final Four contender. But little did we know that you can't really run five guys into the ground like they did early and often. Of course, December 1st last year, Kyle Lofton sprains his ankle against Coppin State. 2 weeks later, he returns a little prematurely and they get blown out by Virginia Tech. And in the 3 weeks after that, they were on a COVID pause, which I would argue really upended their season and changed destiny for the Bonnies. And yet, in the same vein, there's a real redemptive story in all this, in that they went on a magical run, traveled 5,000 miles, and ended up at Madison Square Garden, which I was with a bunch of Bonaventure people this week. Everybody's still talking about how only Bonaventure, a school of 1,800, and way up in Western New York in the Enchanted Mountains, took over Madison Square Garden for the NIT. And as you alluded to earlier with those rumors circulating around Coach Schmidt, sources within the program have told me that he used that to get a raise. So he kind of played UMass like a fiddle, and his agent did the same thing to ensure that he could receive a higher payday. And at the end of the day, Mark Schmidt has done amazing things for this university. If you look back when he started in 2008, the university was debating whether or not to go Division III. And 15 years later, Bonaventure has their highest freshman enrollment incoming next fall, which is really impressive to see. I know everything doesn't revolve around basketball, but the men's team does give this school a lot of recognition for a little school tucked away in Western New York, like I mentioned. And Schmidt has played a big part in that. Now, to discuss about the present, yes, there is a brand new roster. There's only one returner from last year, Justin and Jack Tajore, and he scored a total of 4 points. As you mentioned, Oshuna Shudiyi went to Iowa State, as did Jaron Holmes. Jalen Attaway went pro. He just signed a two-way contract there with the NBA. And Dom Welch went to Alabama. Kyle Lofton went to Florida. There were rumors circulating in the first couple of weeks in April that the big three of Dom Welch, Lofton, and Oshuniyi were going to return to run it back once more. And those four guys started as a freshman and were a Nelson Caputo three-point shot away from going to the NCAA tournament as freshmen in 2019. If you remember, Bonaventure lost a heartbreaker to St. Louis in the A-10 title game. Those guys entered the NIL world, and they received some big paydays from those bigger Power Five institutions. And how can you blame them? They're trying to make some money. They're trying to go professional. I don't blame them one bit. And it's a new opportunity to showcase their skills. And all four of those players are tremendous, tremendous people, great basketball players. And I wish them nothing but the best, but it does leave Bonaventure in a very precarious position. They've gotten some transfers. They've gotten some new recruits. College basketball fans everywhere will remember Daryl Banks III. He's the guy from St. Peter's who scored 27 points against Kentucky in the first round of the NCAA tournament last year and helped lead the Peacocks to the Elite Eight. Banks is now a Bonnie. Kyrell Luke, freshman from Holy Cross, Patriot League Rookie of the Year a season ago, is now a Bonnie. Maxim Madison, who spent the last 2 years at Pittsburgh as a center, even though he wasn't as productive as many anticipated when he showed up in Pittsburgh, he's a big body in the middle who I think can garner a lot of attention, as can Chad Venning, who came from Morgan State, another big body. And another guy I'm really interested to see is Moses Flowers, who averaged 14 points per game at Hartford a season ago. And Hartford's getting ready to transition to Division III, hence why Flowers wanted to make a move. So that's kind of the whole picture about where Bonaventure is right now. I'm really excited about some of the freshmen that are coming in too. We also had two guys redshirt a season ago, Brett Rumpel and Anwar Malouk. Those two guys should be able to make an impact. And we'll just have to see where we go from there. But I know everybody that I've talked to in and around the program, students, fans, alumni, are really excited for November 7th when Bonaventure opens up against St. Francis.
Yeah, I mean, that's as great a preview as any that you could have given right there. And I want to get into some of the things that you said there. But first, you know, I know you were just saying that, you know, it was, you know, the Schmidt to UMass was kind of a ploy to, you know, maybe get a little bit more money from St. Bonaventure. But, you know, from what you heard, did it ever actually get to, you know, past that? Did it ever actually get to talks with UMass from what you know? Or what you would be comfortable saying?
I am not comfortable to share the information that I know now, just on the sake of my sources and my own credibility. But I will say, I think that move was exaggerated greatly on social media. I'll put it that way.
That's very fair. You know, we probably see that. That probably happens way more often than we think. But let's get into that. A lot of those guys that you mentioned on that roster. So from the way that you kind of explained it, and you know what we saw last year with St. Bonaventure is, you know, this team last year was talented, but it was not deep, and it was not very, I would say, like, very versatile. They played very strictly kind of four out and did not really, you know, rely on their bench that much. Based on, you know, the transfers, the newcomers, the redshirt freshmen that are now starting to play, this team sounds deeper, they sound more balanced, and they sound way more equipped to have a long, to get through a very long season. You know, we're going to, you know, this is the time now, I think, you know, knock on wood, fingers crossed, that we're not going to really be seeing COVID pauses anymore. We're not going to be able to, we're not really seeing teams, you know, kind of struggle to get games in, and you're going to have a full 30 plus game schedule. So do you think that this Bonnies team is way more equipped for something like that?
Absolutely. And quite frankly, what I'm most excited about this team is to see how Schmidt mixes and matches the roster in any given night. I think over the first 3-4 weeks of the season, we're going to see a lot of different starting lineups just to see who can gel with who and who's playing well. And that's a good thing. Get guys minutes, get these guys acclimated and really comfortable with each other before Atlantic 10 play starts at the beginning of the new year. But at the same time, who knows? I mean, Schmidt, he's never really played anybody more than a 8-9 man rotation throughout his tenure at Bonaventure. He kind of echoes the old school John Chaney approach and that Iron Man 5, but we'll have to see. And with talking with people over the weekend, nobody knows. I mean, nobody knows what the starting lineup's going to look like. I mean, I saw projections where Kyrell Luke might be the backup starting point guard. Who knows, right? It's just kind of a mystery, but we'll find out in due time on November 7th.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting because, you know, I think that's kind of a testament, right, to the experience of Mark Schmidt. And what we see with a lot of, like, you know, veteran head coaches in that, yes, you know, from a fan's point of view who just cares that their team is in the win column from day to day, like, that's tough. It's tough seeing your team, you know, come out with a different set of guys every night because that doesn't really lend itself well to wins. But when you're Mark Schmidt, you know that unless you're just hunting to be consistent in the top 25 every week, non-conference wins are kind of more of just, you know, kind of an exhibition win. You know, it's all about your conference record. It's all about your performance in the conference tournament. So it'll be really interesting to see, like, how he manages those guys. When you're talking about the origin for a lot of these guys that you mentioned, you know, you were talking about Patriot League, St. Peter's, you know, even Power Five schools. One guy that I thought was really interesting that the Bonnies really seem to be teeing up is this guy from Ireland, Max Amadison. And did I get that right? Or
close? Max Amadison.
Amadison. What do you like from him? It's not so often that we really see a player come from, like, the British Isles, especially in college basketball, right? So what about his game do you think appealed to the Bonnies?
Well, Max is a really interesting story, and I've had the distinct privilege of interviewing each of the players this offseason. And if you're interested in checking out my interview with Max, head over to 810 Talk. It's on my page there. It's also on Go Bonnies TV on YouTube. But a Madison is, he grew up in the suburbs of Dublin, and his family is of Nigerian descent. And he came over and actually started playing ball in the Bronx and then went to Pitt. He prioritizes defense, and he's a terrific rebounder. I'm not so convinced on what he brings offensively, but the thing about the Atlantic 10 Conference, as I've learned watching this conference for more than a decade now, is defense wins championships. And if a Madison can be a big body in the middle, control the paint and secure rebounds and really not make a fool out of himself on offense and make sure that those bunnies go in, that's all you need. That's all you need, because you win with guards, you win with good defense. I'm sure that Coach Steve Curran, who's, I think, one of the most underrated assistant coaches in the country, who's developed big men like Andrew Nicholson, Yusu Endoy, Deion Wright, and most recently Oshun Oshunyi, can definitely help Max Madison take that next step on offense and ensure that he is a reliable Atlantic 10 big man on the offensive end of the floor.
That's awesome. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. I mean, you know, I think the Bonnies have had a history of, like you just said, of pumping out really strong, consistent big men. So, I mean, I think the fact that they're able to, you know, have such huge departures and then kind of, you know, you don't want to just pump out the same guys year to year, right? But the fact that you can pump out guys that follow like a specific mindset and are consistently great is something that's really interesting. And it is really a testament to how, you know, like wise of a program, this St. Bonaventure group is.
And Sam, I'd be remiss. I know we're talking about roster here, but there is one player who I'm also very excited to watch. And I think a lot of Bonaventure fans and alumni are thrilled about this recruit. And that's Jan Farrell. He's the first four-star recruit in Bonaventure history. He's 6'6" and he's a combo guard with a 6'11" wingspan. And that does not players like that typically don't go to Bonaventure, you know, but at least what the scouts have said and what the coaches have said is that he's a catch and shoot player. He can shoot the three, but he can also score off the dribble. What I'm envisioning his potential is a bigger, longer Jalen Attaway. And some people have said that Jan Farrell could be a day one starter as a freshman. So it really excited to see what Farrell can bring.
Yeah. So if you can kind of put your prediction cap on, right? Like we just said, you know, we could be seeing a different starting lineup week to week, but that first game where, you know, they open in the Riley Center. Yes. They have that exhibition game November 2nd against Alfred. So that's, you know, that's probably going to be like, you know, a very experimental game, but that first game against St. Francis in Bonaventure, what do you see being the Bonnie starting lineup? If you could outline
that
for me.
That's a great question. And frankly, I know I'm going on the record here and saying this, but 2-3 weeks from now, I could be completely wrong when the season starts. I think it's going to be a combo of Luke at point, Banks at shooting guard. I think Jan Farrell is going to be a starter. I also think Moses Flowers, right? I mean, there are so many guys that you could throw in, but I do think it's going to be a Madison at the five, Flowers, Farrell, Banks, and Luke. Again, could be way off, but who knows? There are some mysteries in this program, but I don't know if there's necessarily question marks about these players' ability. It's just to see what's going to work best for the Bonnies.
That's great. That's that. I mean, honestly, it's one of those things where it's like, yes, it's uncertainty, but it's like in the best way possible. Right. I mean, you just don't know like where this team it's not where this team is going to trip along the way. It's like, where are they going to succeed the most? So, I mean, it'll be really exciting to see. And based on the way, you know, the way that the Bonnies traveled last year, you know, down to South Carolina, the way that they filled the Garden. I was at that semifinal game at the Garden. And it was electric. It was one of the best college basketball environments I've been in New York in a really long time.
like anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was excellent. I mean, people I knew who, like, I didn't even know were alumni were, you know, talking to me about it. I saw people post on Facebook. It's just one of those things where it's like, it's just the perfect time to you know, kind of ignite a fan base like this. And I think there's a lot of fan bases in the A-10 that are waiting for their moment.
And I've got a quick story to share, Sam, if you allow me to have time. So
go for it.
And I'm sure Andrew and his loyal Chicago brethren will find this maybe ridiculous, but also it's what Bonaventure's all about. So obviously Bonaventure goes on the NIT run last year. They beat Colorado, Oklahoma, Virginia, all on the road. And there's a tremendous hype because there's a lot of hype before the season coming out of COVID, right? Being in little Allegheny, New York, not a lot to do during the winter, let alone during the winter in a pandemic, right? You can't go to the basketball games. That's what the whole school bonds over. So last winter, everybody was really excited. And unfortunately, the circumstances that I laid out earlier, it is what it was, but all in all, a great season. So Bonaventure alumni and many fans rallied together and put together almost $40,000 to bus the kids to the Garden. Bus the fan base 7 hours from Allegheny, New York, down Route 86 and all the way to MSG on a Tuesday in March during the middle of a semester. Of course, one of those buses breaks down outside of Binghamton. And what I was told was about 75 kids, unfortunately, couldn't make the trip. Sam, would you think when you were at the Garden, did you think that quite possibly a bus broke down with all the kids there?
No, I was literally like, I think all of Western New York is in the Garden right now.
Right. It was just amazing to see how, and it was great because I'm a master's student right now at Bonaventure too. So I get the university emails. And when that email came out Friday afternoon with the game the following Tuesday, all right, we've got 8 buses lined up. Thank you to our alums for chipping in. But that's what it's all about. That to me is just a little story that encompasses St. Bonaventure of little Western New York.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. And I think they're going to have plenty of opportunities to, like, get some great buses going, right, in their non-conference schedule. So looking at the first half of their season, I see two that I think I don't want to say I see two really great opportunities for the Bonnies to, you know, show their stuff on a regional, on a national stage. But for you first, what are your favorite non-conference games for the Bonnies?
My favorite game is the game against Iona on December 11th at the Barclays Center. I am so excited to see Mark Schmidt go up against Rick Pitino. The Bonnies and Iona used to play together a lot. They haven't played since 2014. So I'm excited to have that series renewed. The only disappointing thing about the other Bonaventure non-conference game in the New York area against Notre Dame on Black Friday is that game is on Black Friday. I'm not sure what the fan turnout's going to be considering it's Thanksgiving weekend. A lot of people in Western New York might have family events or previous Thanksgiving commitments. The other story about that, and this is what makes Madison Square Garden so special last March, is the Gotham Classic has historically been played at MSG. For the first time this season, this tournament is moving to UBS Arena, which is a new Islanders arena out in Belmont. So not that I'm not excited to go to UBS Arena. I just think it would have been cooler if Bonaventure got to play Notre Dame at MSG and kind of have that one more experience at the world's most famous arena. But the other game that intrigues me as well is Bonaventure gets to play South Dakota State. The third game of the season. So they start with St. Francis of PA on November 7th. They go at Canisius on Saturday the 12th, and then 3 days later on Tuesday the 15th, they're at South Dakota State. And even though their best player from a year ago, Shireman, transferred to Creighton, that's going to be a tough game. And I think that's really going to be a good thermometer for the Bonnies to see where that temperature is in the early part of the season.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, you definitely, it's tough because, you know, once you get into conference play, you're not going that far. But I think it's a great way for, you know, Schmidt to, you know, kind of get his guys. You always want to get one game. You know, you want to win every game, but you always want to get one game where you kind of make your guys a little bit uncomfortable. And, you know, maybe climate wise, I mean, South Dakota is probably a little bit similar to, you know, that area of New York that Bonaventure finds itself in. But, you know, it'll be interesting, you know, have these guys kind of play far away. So that'll be a really interesting game to see.
Yeah. And just to add to that point, Sam, real quick.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm taking up all of your time here. Traveling that far bonds a team. You're spending a lot of time together on the plane. You're spending hours together in hotel rooms, hanging out, laughing, building a bond. I think that's going to be really important early, and I'm sure it went into Schmidt's decision and the program's decision to schedule this game that early in the season.
Yeah, no doubt. So a lot of interesting stuff coming out of Bonaventure. I think this will be a very fun team to watch. And before we get into our last segment, I know you're at grad school at St. Bonaventure, but I know you went to undergrad at Holy Cross. So I have to ask, will you admit that this is the year that Holy Cross yields the Patriot League to Fordham football and Fordham beats Holy Cross in Worcester this year?
Sam, have you seen how dominant the Holy Cross Crusaders are on the gridiron this year?
Have you seen Fotis Kokosoulis put up 320 yards against Ohio in Ohio? That's what I have to ask you.
I will say Halloween weekend, that's the game of the college football calendar. Throw out the SEC, throw out Big Ten. It's Fordham at Holy Cross. It's going to be a top 25 FCS matchup. No, that's going to be terrific. It really is. Holy Cross beat UB on a Hail Mary, which was incredible. But looking at Fordham and the teams they've played, what intrigues me the most about them, they put up numbers on offense. They can score. Yeah. So I know Holy Cross has beat Bucknell last week in 57-0, and they're now seventh in the FCS rankings. But Fordham's their last true test. Fordham is their last true test. And I'm kind of bummed that game's not in the Bronx, given now that I live in New York City and I can't attend that game. But that should be a good one. I'm really excited about that one.
No, I feel you. I mean, you know, my freshman year at Fordham, they had that game at Yankee Stadium. And that was when the programs were both also really good. But I mean, this is just one of those games where I'm like, oh God, like you gotta put it somewhere big because I don't think you'll be able to do it for a while. Because you know, while Fordham is so great, I mean, they got a lot of guys leaving, so it'll be very interesting. I'll definitely be you know.
Well, I was at that game at Yankee Stadium. I was at that game at Yankee Stadium too with my whole family, right? And we all come down for the game. Fordham kicked Holy Cross's ass. I mean, it was over at halftime.
Well, that was the Chase Ed. That was the last year because he was injured his the next year. That was like the one of the big Chase Edmund years. So it'll be good to see. I mean, I've been wanting this game to be good like ever since that last one. So
it's on game day there. Why not? I know, right? Game day to Worcester, right?
Send it to Worcester on the hill.
Rocky Top, that's overrated. They've already been there twice. Why not go to Fitton Field in Worcester, Mass? Seven Hills of Worcester? Come on.
Oh, man. But yeah, well, you know. We'll get back to our last basketball segment of the night. So I want to go around. We did this last week, and I thought it was really fun with our first four teams. And, you know, I think there's a lot going. This is one of those years where you can't really tell, like, oh, like we're putting in our power rankings tonight. I was really struggling with it, right? Starting off with you, Andrew, and then we'll go Andrew, Joe, and then Jack. Give me the feistiest, hottest take that you can give for this team, you know, that we could either, you know, be like, oh my God, I can't believe he got that in April. Or we could be like, oh, like, I can't believe I said that, you know? So Andrew, on the spot.
Yeah. I know how good the guard play is in A-10. I know there are especially two point guards that are head and shoulders above the rest, and Ace Baldwin and Yuri Collins. My hottest take is that Braden Norris will be a first team all A-10 player this year. His efficiency numbers are excellent. His 3-point shooting is wonderful. He now has a experienced big to go along with him that I think they're going to run the pick and roll and pick and pop. I've seen Bryce Golden can shoot the ball a little bit too. I think his assist numbers will go up. If you take a look at his freshman year at Oakland, and I know that's Oakland in Michigan, but his assist numbers were fantastic. So I think he has a chance. I think now he's going to get a lot more opportunities. He's going to have the ball in his hands a lot more with Lucas Williamson gone. I think Brandon Norris, first team all A-10. That's my hot take.
Awesome. Joe, what's Fran Dunphy bringing to the table? Where's he taking you guys this year?
Oh boy, this is, if this hits, I'm going to look like an absolute genius. And when it probably doesn't, I'm going to look like an idiot. But my scorching hot take is that LaSalle is in the quarterfinals for the A-10 tournament. At least. I think, now I really hope that they don't have to play in the pillow fight, but I think if they do, like they did last year, I think they make it out of that and then beat whoever. I mean, last year they really did take a whoop into St. Louis in the second round, but I think that this new look Explorer team can really, really surprise some people, especially at the beginning of conference play, just because people don't really know quite exactly what they're going to be up against. I mean, it's a new look team. I mean, you have some returners, Khalil Brantley, Jameer Brickus, Anwar Gill, like those guys are returning and they were solid for us last year, but there's a lot of newcomers. And I think a big difference between last year and this year is that there's no like big spotlight MVP player. Like last year, if you shut down Clifton Moore, you basically shut down the whole offense. Like Jack Clark had his moments and he was good, but like Clifton Moore was by far our most consistent player. And I just think you don't have that this year. I think there's, like I said, 10, 11 guys that can see the floor. And I think this year they put it together and get at least to the quarterfinals of the A-10. Nice. I really hope it hits. I don't look like an idiot saying that, but you know, we'll see in April.
That might be, honestly, out of the six I've heard so far, that honestly might be the strongest take, but I guess we'll see. Jack, yeah. aside from Holy Cross being a competent football team, what's your hottest take?
My hottest take about the Bonnies this year is that they are going to avoid the Wednesday pillow fight. They're now Tuesday pillow fight, I should say, right? That we've got an extra day in between, a rest day on that Friday, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
A lot of people over the summer and when the 2021-22 season ended were pretty much planning Bonaventure's funeral for the following season, saying they're going to finish 14th, now with Loyola Chicago in the conference 15th. LaSalle and Duquesne, no offense, Joe, are going to finish ahead of them. Schmidt has too much experience in this league and is too good of an X's and O's coach, and he knows how to connect with his players. I could see the Bonnies finishing as high as 7th, but I don't think they finish lower than 9th. I think it's somewhere in that 7-9 range.
Nice. All right. So, I mean, that's some good stuff. A lot of great previews from these teams. We've still got, if my math is correct, we've still got about 8 teams left to cover on the A-10 Talk podcast. Media Day is this week, so you'll be seeing a flood of content from our team, especially, you know, the 4 guys that we've got right here, myself, Sam Basil, Andrew Buckles, Joe Branderbilt, and Jack Milko. Follow all of us on Twitter as well as A-10 Talk for updates on all of your favorite teams. And until then, we'll see you guys next time.